Hey, welcome to BJJ Mental Models episode. Fuck, what episode is this? Andrew, what episode number is this?
You have like 500 now, right?
I know, I've totally forgotten. I guess it doesn't matter. I'm Steve Kwan. BJJ Mental Models is your guide to a conceptual and intelligent jiu-jitsu approach. And today, happy to be joined again by friend of the show, internet darling, and human buzzsaw, Mr. Andrew Wiltsey. How's it going, Andrew?
Hello. I am significantly more sane than the last time we talked. Manic episode's over with, and now I'm pretty much down to earth, ready to talk about anything.
Do you want to go into that? Do you want to talk about your manic episode? Because we talked about it a bit last time, but if you want to give an update, it's been a while. So if you want to share some news with the community, go for it.
Yeah. So the problem when we were talking is I didn't realize I was still going through a manic episode because I had functionally zero knowledge about what a manic episode was supposed to entail, how long it was supposed to last. And the people around me and the professionals I was talking to were doing a very poor job kind of like guiding me through it. You know, so I thought a manic episode was supposed to last a couple of days. You know, I went a week without sleeping and I had full psychosis and I went nuts. But it didn't go away. It's like those thought patterns kind of imprinted on my brain. And I had the manic episode, I think it lasted for like 2 months or 3 months or something like that. You know, where it took a long time for the mood stabilizer to kind of kick me out of it. And I was just completely off my rockers. I was wild. I was saying stuff and doing stuff that I would never do in my normal function.
Interesting. Yeah, I remember when I was just telling you before the show, I'd heard that Andrew had like gotten into whiteboards and stuff and was being a little bit different. And I thought, okay, well, hey, whiteboards are great in all fairness.
Yeah, I still love whiteboards, man.
But I remember we hopped on a recording and yeah, you definitely kind of had like a manic level of energy, but everything you were saying was coherent and made sense. I mean, I kind of figured that, okay, clearly, you know, you're understandably pissed off at Reddit at the moment, but other than that, I thought the conversation made sense. There was nothing in there that I thought was super problematic or anything. I ran it by a few people and they said, you know what, it's no one had any issues with the conversation. And then, you know, you went ahead and put it on your YouTube channel and I thought, sweet, I don't have to make a decision anymore. I'm going to publish it.
That was a manic episode thing. I wouldn't do that normally. That was not like a normal Wiltsey thought where I'm just like, yeah, let me just post this real quick. You know? So my judgment was completely compromised for the entire time. And it was hard for people to tell who don't know me super well or they're not around me all the time. But that level of energy and that level of like my speech pattern, the rushed, pressured speech and the need to fill silence, that's atypical for me.
Got it. I got a question. Did you ever figure out what triggered the episode at the beginning? I mean, I remember last time we spoke about this on the show, you had some theories, but it's been a while. And I wonder if you ever were able to diagnose exactly what went on.
Okay. Yeah. I've had so much time to think about this. So here's from start to finish, what actually happened. Okay. So I went to a doctor. Okay. She's a nurse practitioner and she specializes in psychiatric care and mental health. And I got diagnosed as ADHD, severe ADHD, and she put me on Adderall to help, and it helped a lot. It really made a big difference in my life. It removed a lot of my anxiety, a lot of problems I was having. It really kind of let me take charge of the person that I wanted to be. But the problem was she did not put me on a mood stabilizer at the same time because I am diagnosed bipolar, and it's been something that's bothered me my whole life. But typically, I've only dealt with the depression side of bipolar. I've had hypomanic episodes where for a couple days I've had like a kick up in energy and I may say some dumb stuff in an interview that I wouldn't normally say, like, yeah, I'll beat the fuck out of this guy. Whereas normally I'd be like, oh, he's a great opponent. You know, so it's like it does compromise my judgment a little bit, but really I kind of channel it towards jiu-jitsu and I just train super hard. But without the mood stabilizer, the Adderall was a stimulant. So you gave someone who's bipolar a stimulant without a mood stabilizer, which is a huge no-no. And it slowly ramped up over the course of 3 months until I had a period where I really got interested in Photoshop and my hyperfocus from ADHD kicked into 1,000 and I spent like 3 days learning Photoshop and making thumbnails, but I just didn't sleep for those 3 days because my brain was so activated and I was so kicked into gear. So I didn't sleep for 3 days and then I went and taught a seminar and that was the 6-hour seminar that used to be on YouTube that people have watched and they think that's what a normal seminar for me looks like. The way that kind of went down was, you know, I was doing such a fantastic job of teaching that I didn't really want to stop. I'm like, if you guys don't mind, I'll go longer. And they were like, yeah, fuck yeah. So it continued to go. And I am aware 6 hours is too long to teach a seminar, especially with very few breaks. But that was the manic episode starting to ramp up. And it escalated so quickly. And I was so unprepared for it. I didn't know what was going on. You know how people always say that crazy people can't tell they're crazy.
Yeah.
I used to doubt that. I used to think that my background of rationality and just the level of critical thinking that I apply to myself and introspection, I'd be able to outthink being crazy. And you know what, Steve? I was wrong. I was very wrong. So it escalated even further. I went, I think, a week straight without sleeping one time.
Man.
Where I would lay in bed, I'd try to go to sleep. I'd have a whiteboard or a pen or something next to my bed. And I would just like every 10 minutes or 20 minutes, I would sit up and write an idea down. It was just like ideas were coming to me like crazy. And I'm like, this must be what it feels like to be really engaged with life and to be really kind of keyed in. Whereas a lot of time I have like dissociative tendencies and I tend to kind of to check out a little bit. It's just kind of how I operate. You know, I talk to a therapist about this now, and I put a significantly more effort into my mental health now than I did back then. But it just felt like I was finally keyed in for the first time. You know, the level of emotion that I was experiencing was completely abnormal for me. I'm generally an emotionally muted kind of guy where, yeah, when I won the world as a brown belt, I was just like kind of hyped, you know, this is cool. But I, you know, I'm not like Couch where I fucking cry at everything, you know? So it's just, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed having those emotions. So there were so many pros that I was overlooking the cons, and I went into complete denial about the fact that I was experiencing a severe medication-induced manic episode.
Yeah, I remember when you were on the podcast last time, you were talking about this stuff. Question for you, was there a moment where you realized, okay, I actually do have an issue? Because did something happen that eventually triggered and made you realize, oh, okay, maybe I actually am not over this manic episode yet. Maybe I'm still in the throes of it.
Yeah, so the first indicator that I got was, you know, I kept kind of thinking, you know, I haven't really slept well in a week. That seems kind of off. And I was starting to shake. I was twitching. I was going on these long, completely incoherent rants, and I was videotaping them and putting them up and then deleting them an hour later. And it was absurd. And I remember kind of laying down after like I had accomplished all my manic goals. You know, I got the gym rat program going. That big seminar that I just became a huge mess, even though it was free, which I do want to talk about that. And some of the other stuff was going on. You know, I had this big plan that was completely me experiencing psychosis and being nuts, but I had accomplished it. And I was laying in bed and I was like, all right, everyone's telling me I'm manic. What would it look like if I was actually manic? And I really started to think about it. And then I was able to take a step back and realize that I was actually fucking nuts at the time. And the realization actually helped me go to sleep. I was able to sleep for like 15 hours that night. The problem was I wasn't really aware of this at the time, and not intrinsically at least, that manic episodes that are that severe can kind of imprint thought patterns on you. So I had all these manic thought patterns, which were not really coherent. And I had all this psychosis level of the kind of like thoughts about reality and thoughts about things that were going on that not necessarily have been true whatsoever. You know, psychosis, you're kind of like making stuff up in your head and assuming it's real. You know, I was delusional completely. But I remember I was finally able to sleep, and I assumed that the sleep was going to fix the manic episode because I thought it was going to be a short-term thing, and then I was fine to go. And then I just thought that the manic episode thought patterns, I was kind of taking the positive, you know, really connected, keyed in life, having billions of ideas a day, super motivated, want to do all the stuff at all at the same time, which I usually struggle with motivation problems. So I just took it as a positive experience, and I just kind of carried on doing what I was doing. So there wasn't much of a difference between me being fully in the manic episode, haven't slept for a week, and the 2 month or 3 month period afterwards where I was just dealing with the manic thought patterns as I was coming down from the manic episode.
Right. So how did they eventually fix that? Did they put you on like a counterbalancing medication, or did something change? Just curious to know how you kind of got back on track to where you are today.
So it was really a time thing. Like I immediately got put on a mood stabilizer called Vraylar, which is supposed to be incredibly effective for dealing with manic episodes in particular and preventing manic episodes and kicking you out of them. But I was so manic, I was taking it inconsistently because I was like, I don't need it. You know, I just wasn't really taking care of myself the way I was supposed to. And I was also lying to people around me about like whether I was taking the medication or not, which is a huge no-no. And that's also not something I would normally do. You know, normally I'm completely transparent and honest and open about everything. But it just took a lot longer than I thought it was to come back to normal. So the problem with a manic episode that's really severe is when you go high as you go is as low as you're going to go. Okay, so after the manic episode wore off to where I wasn't like super hyped anymore and the thought patterns had kind of chilled out, Then I had to deal with the most crippling depressive episode I've ever experienced in my life. And I thought I had a handle on depression. I thought I was a goddamn combat veteran from Vietnam when it came to depression. You know, I figured I could handle it. But that is honestly the closest I've come to suicide was after that manic episode. It was fucking brutal. And it lasted for months.
Yeah, I remember you kind of just disappeared completely off the face of the earth. And it, you know, I think everyone kind of knew what was going on. Your team was out there kind of communicating and saying, hey, he's good. Just give him some time. And of course, I'm so happy to see that you're kind of back to 100%, or at least it appears that way. But I would want to know, you know, this, I think we all know that mental health is an ongoing concern for really everyone in the world, but in jiu-jitsu especially. A lot of people come to jiu-jitsu because it can be a focus that can help with mental health. I get that everyone's situation is different, but did anything come out of this that would, you know, based on your experience, any advice or suggestions you'd give to other people who maybe are going through similar battles in your situation? Or is that just too hard a question to answer?
No, so I mean, I did everything as wrong as you possibly could. You remember last time we talked, I hinted at the Great Escape?
Yes, you did.
And I didn't tell the story. So I made the terrible decision while I was full-on psychosis and manic. I escaped from a mental hospital, essentially. People came by my house when I hadn't slept for a week still, and I was still nuts, and they were like, you need to go and you need to get checked out. And I was like, you guys are annoying me so much that I'm going to go just for you, just so you guys will feel happy. I know I'm not manic, you know? And I went, and I had this 12-hour period where I didn't know what was going on. I was by myself in this back room and no one was talking to me. They knew that I was like this martial arts champion, so I was physically dangerous. So like every time I sat up, they kind of like came at me with the needles ready to sedate me. And I'd be like, guys, I'm cooperating. I just don't understand what's going on. I haven't had water in 12 hours or food in 12 hours, you know? And how I got out of that was I talked to the ambulance people who were supposed to transfer me from the hospital to the mental hospital. And during the transit, they were like, well, you seem fine to us. And, you know, the doctor had talked me into going to the mental hospital by saying, you will be able to go and get evaluated by someone. And if you're fine, they'll just let you out right away, which was a lie because there's actually a 72-hour hold. So I was going to be there for 3 days no matter what. And when the ambulance guy told me that, I'm like, well, I don't necessarily want to go there now. You know, that's not what the doctor told me. And he's like, well, we can just let you out right now. So they let me out on the side of the road with like no shoes on, like just my jacket, no phone. And I had to have Heath come pick me up actually from this random ass town, like 25 miles away.
That sounds not advisable. Holy smokes.
No, it was nuts. That's the problem. My judgment was so compromised. You know, what, 3 days chill in a facility? It's nothing. Yeah, I should have just gone. And if I had gone, maybe they would have explained it to me a little better. But again, my judgment was so compromised at the time. You know, I made bad decisions.
You know, when you said that you escaped the mental facility, I assumed you like knee sliced through the wall or something like that. I didn't assume you just asked to be let out on the middle of the road.
I was so nuts that I probably could have got out for real by crawling through the ceiling tiles and shit. Like, that's the level of Rambo that I was. But that's not good. That's not rational and healthy. You know, that's the opposite of what I am.
Well, hey, let me flip this question around because this is something that I think a lot about. In the jiu-jitsu world, we always talk about mental health. Everyone is talking about the importance of this. And I think everyone agrees that, you know, it is normal to go through mental health issues and we should always be supportive of people who do. But I would want to know from your perspective, when this does happen to someone, the challenge that I observe is people will always say, oh, we should always be supportive of our friends who are having mental health issues. But then when that actually happens, people kind of go quiet and they try to distance themselves from those people and they don't want anything to do with them.
Yeah.
And that really seems like the opposite of what you should do if you really want to support your friends when you're going through a mental health situation. But I honestly don't know what the best answer is. And I would want to get your perspective on that. I mean, if this happens to a friend of yours, what should you do? Should you continue to stay engaged? Should you kind of back out and wait for them to kind of come back to normal? What is the right protocol for something like this?
I can only really talk to what I think would have helped me. I think the worst thing you could have done was to just disengage from me and just not want anything to do with me. Mm-hmm. Now, what I think that someone should do is just be around and like be, I could have been guided through it. Mm-hmm. You know, I could have had someone guide me through the manic episode and just like steer me in the right direction and prevent me from doing some of my stupider stuff and prevent me from making more of a fool of myself. You know, just tell me, stop making videos and why, how nuts you're coming off, you know? And that would have been helpful. And just telling them and knowing that you're going to be their friend no matter what, you're going to support them, even when they do dumb shit, that's helpful. So I've lost a lot of friends actually since the manic episode. There's quite a few people who can't see past it, where they think, hey, Andrew's an asshole or Andrew's just nuts. Whereas it was, the reality of it was that it was a temporary mental break. You know, it's like I've gone 30 years without that happening, happened once. It's unlikely to happen again now that we're actually taking precautions and the situation that kicked it off isn't really likely to happen again. You know, I'm not on a stimulant without being on some kind of mood stabilizer to balance it out.
Yeah.
So I just be there for them. You're not necessarily going to always talk them down from what they're doing, but you a lot of times can just be like something that was really helpful to me was George Valadares actually came over to my house when I was manic and he went with me to the mental hospital and he was just there and he was a calming presence. You know, he was helpful to have around. That was helpful. That was being a good friend.
This is the thing that I always find a bit challenging about the mental health discussion is that I think everyone in their heart, they want to support people who are going through these issues, but it is hard to see people close to you experience this, and it's easier for people to just disengage. I think that that's unfortunately probably just going to make the situation a lot worse a lot of the time. You know, when we had that episode, like I said, I mean, I didn't quite know the extent of it at first when we talked. I mean, clearly you were definitely on the hyper side, but you were pretty coherent. I mean, yeah, you were talking about how, you know, you were going to build $1 million business. But look, frankly, this is jujitsu. 90% of the people who come on this podcast are telling me they're going to do that. And you were clearly, you know, a bit edgy about some things. But frankly, I would have been too if a bunch of people on Reddit were speculating about my mental health. So I was thinking about it and I talked to some friends and they all said like, look, you know, there's nothing wrong with this episode. You know, clearly Andrew's coming down from this, but you know, there shouldn't be anything wrong with publishing it. I was kind of humming and hawing about it. And I kind of came to the conclusion, and you tell me if this was the wrong conclusion. But my thought was that, you know, if you ask me why I do this thing, one of the big things that's important to me is to make jiu-jitsu an inclusive place. I love the fact that in jiu-jitsu, we can bring together people who are completely different. And I really feel like if you, you know, cut people out because they're having a mental health episode, it doesn't really send the right message in a lot of ways about inclusion, right? I would rather, you know, be transparent and invite people who are different to the podcast and people who are struggling. I mean, granted, I don't want to put anyone on the spot and embarrass them, but like I said, you know, it's clear you wanted to publish it anyway, so we went ahead and did it. Was that the right decision, do you think, or would it have been better to just like delete the file and never mention it again?
So honestly, like if you were fully aware that I was going through a manic episode, I would have preferred if you deleted it. The problem was my judgment was so compromised. I was essentially a child. I couldn't make an informed decision on whether or not to put a thing out where I sound absolutely crazy because I couldn't tell that I sounded crazy. But that's not fair to ask of other people to diagnose you and to, you know, to basically be an arbiter of your mental health. You know, it was just an unfair scenario for you. You didn't do anything wrong in my books. At this point in time, I would prefer if it wasn't out there because it's the last thing that people hear about you is how they think about you. So the last thing people hear, you know, I haven't done a podcast since then is me just sounding completely nuts. They think I'm just nuts in general. They think that that's me and my baseline personality.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, good news. Like you said, we're going to replace that old episode with this episode, which is basically probably going to cover mostly the same topics, but now, hopefully, without the manic issues coming alongside that. But man, personally, I'm happy to have you back. Yeah, it was kind of sad to see you just disappear. I knew that you were in good hands and all of that. But it was an interesting time for sure. But man, I'm so glad that you're kind of back in the saddle, that you're doing well. We were all pretty concerned about you. So it's awesome to see that things are coming back. And I just want to also say, I mean, I know that obviously you don't want to have that convo out there and, you know, we'll replace it with this chat. But I think personally, the fact that you've got people like yourself who are transparent about this kind of thing, it shows people out there that they're not alone, right? I mean, it's easy to say, for example, that mental health is important, but you also need role models who can show you that, hey, there are people who do this, who are, you know, figures in the industry who go through the same issues that I do. So I do think one way or the other, whether it was your intent or not, I think it was good to at least set that example.
No, I love talking about this, and I think it's important to be open and honest about it. The problem is the reality of it scares people. The reality of a mental health break, it freaks people out. And that's something I really noticed where you were saying, like, what should you do in that situation as a friend? Nobody knows what to do. You know, that had to have been hard for everyone at Daisy Fresh to watch their best guy just lose his fucking mind. You know, that can't be easy to watch your friend do, to just go crazy. I don't really blame people for how they reacted during the manic episode. I don't blame Reddit for speculating on my mental health. I mean, goddamn, what else does Reddit exist for, right? Other than to talk about BJJ celebrities, you know? So it's like, I don't blame anyone for their responses that they did at this point. But when I was manic, I did. And I had a lot of hostility towards certain groups of people and certain people in general based on how they reacted to the fact that I was having a manic episode. I just thought it was unfair. But I can't expect people to have that level of empathy. You know, that's just abnormal. You know, to really empathize with something having a psychosis break, that's asking for quite a bit.
Yeah, yeah. Well, hey, I will say this. If there's one productive thing that came out of this, it's that at least your efforts to build up the Gym Rat program did really honestly inspire a lot of people.
That is the coolest thing ever.
Yeah, we got a lot of messages from people who said they were totally inspired to kind of follow along in that pattern. I think I mentioned to you already that we've done the same thing, or we've took on some sponsored athletes to get started. But now part of what we do is we try to use our premium subscription memberships to pay coaches who might not otherwise have these opportunities to kind of help the money flow and to give people opportunities. You know, we're not show your role. I can't be cutting giant checks, but sometimes even a few bucks here and there can make a big difference to people, especially early in their career. So, you know, it wasn't all for naught. I know that a lot of people were really inspired by what you were saying in that episode. So, hey, at least some good came out of it, right?
Yeah, not everything about the manic episode is bad. And me and my little brother have had a lot of time to talk and think about this. My little brother actually probably knows more about manic episodes than I do at this point, because he spent so much time just researching it while I was completely nuts and manic. And the way he looks at it is that a little bit of mania is not a bad thing. You can channel that. You can channel that into motivation, into getting projects done and kicking stuff off. A lot of it is bad.
Yeah.
So with the Gym Rat program itself, it was an idea I had when I was manic. And I think it's a brilliant idea myself, because I'm a brilliant individual, obviously. Please don't take that seriously. And the idea behind it was that every time I go into a seminar and visit other gyms and stuff like that, where I get the opportunity to interact with people I haven't really interacted before, I ask the coach or whoever is organizing the seminar to pick someone to come to the seminar for free. And I want to just do what I can to help them. And the criteria is that they have to be the hardest worker at the gym. They have to be the person who wants it the most, who doesn't necessarily have the means to do it by themselves. Someone who doesn't have a ton of money, but they've got a lot of heart. You know, the kind of guy where if they had access to resources that could guide them and help them out, maybe they could actually do it. You know, they could do it for real, even if they're not from a powerhouse gym. What if you're the Wiltsy living in a box at PSF when no one knew who we were? You know, how are you going to, if I could have had a professional, I could have asked for advice, who could have gave me instructionals and guided me, that would help me so much during my early career. So that's what I just try to do to give back, you know? So the idea is I want gyms to do this themselves. And that's what's happened, I think, since I really started talking about the Gym Rat program, where the gyms themselves just pick one or two students and they pay for some entry fees. They give the student a little extra time, some private lessons without having to pay for them. You know, just that guy who's the gym rat of your gym, that guy that shows up twice a day, every day, helps clean the mat, does everything he can to win and actually help them make that a reality. So I've been completely touched by all the messages I've received about the Gym Rat program and how they're implementing their own, probably better organized than mine. You know, mine is just me, Wiltsy, with not a lot of resources, doing what I can with the resources that I have. And other people can do it way better than I can.
So how's the program going today? I got a DM from one of your guys when I was posting about your program, and he said that, you know, he was one of the guys that you selected, and he said the program completely changed his life. But I haven't checked in a while. How is the program doing today?
I think it's doing fine, man. We're just, it's just really me kind of giving what I can. You know, I don't think it needs to be this complicated save the world thing, but every time I go to a gym, I ask the guy, well, you pick the guy who can come, you know, pick the guy that needs help, and I'm just going to give them what help I can.
Yeah. Yeah. That's really good advice, I think, to understand that, you know, you don't have to change the world all in one go. I remember when I was first thinking about this, when we had that chat, and I thought, you know what, this is a really good idea. But this is a jiu-jitsu podcast, right? I'm not making millions of dollars off of this thing. I can't throw a bunch of money at the wall here, and there's only so much I can do. But I remember talking to some people who are kind of in the know, and they said, you know, look, for a lot of these athletes, if you can guarantee them even just the smallest monthly stipend, right? Even if it's just $100 a month or something, that can be a life-changing difference for someone who's really early on in their career, doesn't have any financial prospects. You know, if the alternative to getting kind of some help is that they've got to go and work in a warehouse and put a ton of miles on their body and pull themselves away from their jiu-jitsu career, any help that you can give them is going to be a benefit.
No, it is. It's so helpful.
Yeah. And that to me was a real breakthrough moment to realize, look, I don't have to be cutting $10,000 checks every month to people if I want to quote unquote help them. Anything you can do is going to help. And the funny thing I noticed is, you know, you start off small, but over time it snowballs, right? There's like a kind of a reaction and a builds. And before you know it, you look back and it's like, shit, we actually did some good here. We really made some improvements and helped some people. So I do think that was an awesome thing that you kicked off. I mean, one way or the other, however we got there, I think the idea was fantastic.
I've given away about $16,000 since I started it.
Holy shit, man.
Which is a lot for me. But yeah, a lot of that was me being manic and just having zero sense of financial fiscal responsibility, which is, I just don't care about that much. I'm not a money oriented guy. But yeah, that's where we're at right now. We've given away about $16,000. But really, the goal is to find ways that you can help them without having to, you know, give away money purely all the time. So it's like, what can I offer someone at all times? You know, I can offer them, you know, I have a lot of technique stuff out there that can help them. They ask me, like, what do I do to get ready for this tournament? They send me videos. What should I do? What am I doing wrong here? And I can kind of work with them on an individual basis and give them my experience as a guy that lived at a gym competing for a decade and has hit the pro level. So that's where I think I can do the most good. It's not necessarily going to be always monetarily, but as an athlete that lived in the gym, you're completely correct. Any amount of money, no matter what, if you pay for an entry fee, any monthly stipend, anything like that for those guys is life-changing. It just means the world to them, because that meant the world to me to ever get help like that, which we never really did. You know, I always thought, what would have helped me the most in the situation that I was in? And that's kind of what I want to do to give back.
Yeah. You bring up a great point too, which is that sometimes money is not the best or the most efficient way to help people. Not enough people talk about what you mentioned, the idea of skill swapping. One of the beautiful things about jiu-jitsu is you've just got so many people from different walks of life who have skills that are otherwise often very expensive. I mean, I'm a tech guy, so one of the things that I'll try to do to help people if I can is, look, if you need help, you know, setting up a website or doing your web marketing, I can help you do that. It costs me nothing but a bit of time, and it might save you a ton of money because if you go and you pay a professional, they're going to charge you through the nose. That's something that I think people don't think enough about when it comes to, man, how can I help people in this community? Sometimes it's not cutting a check. Sometimes it's maybe I've got a service or a skill set that I can quite affordably donate to someone, and it'll make all the difference in the world to them.
No, I completely agree.
So, hey, something else I wanted to ask you about here. I mean, let's talk a bit about athletes in this situation, because I know that you're famously from this situation. You know, you start off young, you're kind of coming up here from nothing, and any bit of help helps. And you talked about how gym owners are often going to be the ones who kind of push the needle on this. What do you think gym owners should be doing or could be doing to kind of help support those athletes if money's not an option?
So if for gym owners themselves, I think money is an option. That's the thing. I think that they just dip into their profits a little bit and they just dedicate a certain amount of resources towards the athletes who are pushing the sport forward and pushing their gym and their name recognition out there by trying to compete underneath their brand. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't even have to be a lot. I think every single gym owner in the world, even some of the worst off ones, can afford $150 entry fee at least once a year, right?
Yeah, that makes a huge difference.
You know, get those guys to a majors.
Yeah, this is one of the things about jiu-jitsu that is quite shocking, is how freaking expensive it is if you want to be a competitor. We were talking to Nick Perler, who's the head of the Perler Wrestling Academy in Missouri, and he's kind of been getting into jiu-jitsu coming from wrestling, and he was saying that, you know, one of the things that shocks him about jiu-jitsu is how unbelievably expensive it is to compete. You know, you fly halfway across the country, you have to pay hundreds of dollars to enter into a tournament. If you don't win, you only get one match and then you got to fly all the way home again. I mean, it's a very expensive life for someone who wants to do this out of the get-go, and there's got to be a better way to do it. So yeah, even just being able to support people with their entry fees, putting them up if they need somewhere to stay, all of that stuff can make a world of difference.
Yeah, and again, as a gym owner and a guy running a gym, you know, your knowledge is going to be invaluable to someone who's just coming up. Like you can put in a lot of individual focus on the guys that are trying their hardest and trying their heart out.
Yep.
And help them out quite a bit just by giving a free private lesson now and then. So for a while, I was toying with an idea of doing a gym rat, like association kind of deal, where we would do, it would be like you take people from every single association who wanted to be on board, but the criteria would be that they have to sponsor one or two gym rats from their own gym. And then I would do what I could to help the gym out itself, you know, work with the coach, give the coach online private lessons, maybe come out and teach some technique for free, put them in the spotlight, shine some eyes in their direction, just anything I could actually do to help the gym owner, as long as he's actually helping his own students. So that was an idea that I had for a while about kind of expanding and kicking this up to the next level.
That's actually a really good idea.
See, not everything from the Manic episode was terrible. I had a lot of ideas.
Are you going to go ahead and do that? I mean, it's a big deal kind of opening up I guess it's not really an affiliation. It's kind of like a loose network, but is that something you're thinking of doing?
It's something I'm thinking about doing, but I need to be in a just completely stable spot before I take on long-term projects. I think like that. I'd like to have my own gym, I think, before I did that. That way I have a place where I can consistently film techniques. I can consistently film rolling footage and I can travel and to have like my own little base that I can work from, more consistent income maybe. And just my mental health has to be consistent. I'm notoriously bipolar, where I have periods of just hyper focus and I will just be producing content like crazy and I'll be training like crazy, winning matches, then I'll just disappear for a while. And I have to really get a handle on that whole disappearing thing, because that is not good when you're doing big projects like that. And right now, you know, like being medicated, talking to therapists, taking my mental health extremely seriously, I think for the first time in my life, I think we're getting close to that point. So if you hear about me launching some kind of big project sometime in the next year, it's not the product of mania. I think we're just in a spot where we can do it.
Awesome. Awesome. How's the rest of the team doing? I mean, like you talked about Bird. How's he doing these days?
Bird is living his best life, man. So he renovated the giant garage that we have out in our yard and he turned it into a house, essentially. So he's got his own fucking place in the middle of the yard. It's huge. Like he probably sneaks girls in there through the fucking gate in the front yard. It's so awesome. And he's having a good time. Like he gets to do video editing. Bird really enjoys making the videos that we make, by the way. So for him, it's a lot of fun to just be able to have that creative outlet to push it, video game music and his little meme into the jiu-jitsu scene. Other guys on the team, I'm training at Daisy Fresh. I only took a little break during the Manic episode. I couldn't focus on too much at once. That was the thing that took the biggest hit, was my ability to focus, because the Manic episode was so bad. It felt like my brain kind of shattered into 1,000 pieces, where you had different facets of Wiltsy that were just competing for attention and it just didn't really work. So my focus went from hyper-focus to not being able to focus at all for a long time. And it's just now getting to the point where I can actually focus again and I can get the stuff done that I would like to get done.
Got it. Now, hey, we talked earlier about how, look, any, you know, helping athletes any way you can is always a good idea. And we talked earlier about different ways to monetize. Something that we didn't get a chance to talk about earlier is the stuff that you guys do beyond instructionals. I mean, of course, many people, I think probably everyone knows that, you know, you're best known for some of the awesome instructionals that you do with BJJ Fanatics. Of course, you're super well known for Daisy Fresh and for the documentary series there. But I know that one of the other things that you do, you guys have that amazing Patreon that you run. There's a lot of stuff on the go. What are your thoughts on that as a model for athletes? Because I've always been surprised at how few people in jiu-jitsu go the Patreon route. In a lot of other industries, particularly entertainment, gaming, for instance, Patreon is a big, big deal, but you don't see that many people go down that route. What are your thoughts on that as a model for people looking to get started and just make some money on the side to kind of help them create a cushion?
I think the Patreon model is super awesome, but you have to have some way to give back. You know, and then a lot of that comes down to exposure. Not, you know, there's guys out there that are just incredible at jiu-jitsu, but don't necessarily have the exposure that I do from Daisy Fresh, who, you know, they might even be able to kick my ass. But if they were to open a Patreon, it probably would not do very well. So the reason mine works is because me and Bird, you know, Bird slaves away producing content for our YouTube channel all day. And we're able to kind of give something back. I'm able to do video reviews for the patrons. I'm able to do video reviews live with them while we're like in a Discord call. I do private lessons with them while me and Bert are out in the gym, kind of like doing live Discord calls while we're on the mats, and we do some other stuff. So that's how I can kind of give back to my patrons. But I don't think that's going to be as easy for everybody. I think it's a great model, but you have to be able and willing to produce content for them. Otherwise, they're going to fall off and they're not going to know who you are, or they're not going to stick around.
Yeah.
One thing that I noticed during our hiatus, we lost a lot of patrons from the account. Not as many as you would think, but I did see a noticeable dip in it because I was just mentally unable to make content for a while. So it's a risky business model. Any business model that relies on donations can't be your only business model. You have to have something else.
Yeah, that's a really, really great piece of advice. When we started off trying to monetize this thing, I've talked about this before in the podcast, but we started this off kind of as a fun hobby. But then around the time the pandemic started and, you know, we realized, shit, we might all lose our jobs and go broke. We better try to monetize this thing. We started off on Patreon. And we had a very good experience similar to yours out of the gate, which is that I was actually shocked at how many people were willing to support us financially. It honestly floored me that, we at the time we didn't have a name or anything. I was really surprised that there were that many people out there who would open up their wallets for us really without any guarantee of anything in return. And yeah, like you said, though, the big thing is, how do you change the psychology here so that people don't just think this is a tip jar, but so that it's actually like a product they're paying for and subscribing to? And you guys do an amazing job of that. I mean, for those who don't subscribe to the Wiltsy Brothers Patreon, I've been on there for years, but it's very affordable. There's a lot of different pricing options. Sorry for the pitch, by the way. I know you get embarrassed about this time. But there's a lot of different pricing options. And yeah, in addition to the instructional content that you guys push out there, one of the differentiators is rolling reviews, right? And I mean, look, there's a lot of sites you can go to sign up on and get access to this, a cool video library, and that's all well and good. But it's a total game changer when you sign up to a subscription and you actually get direct tailored feedback to you. We do this through our service, which is part of how we fund a lot of our coaches. And it's a total game changer. So the fact that you guys allow people to sign up to your Patreon and work directly with you, I mean, honestly, it's one of the first services that I would suggest to people if they're looking for, like, okay, how can I spend a few bucks a month to improve my jiu-jitsu? Probably the best bang for your buck is going to be the Wiltsy Brothers Patreon, in my mind. And rant and pitch.
And rant. I appreciate that, man. Thank you. But as far as like content creation in jiu-jitsu, I'm kind of constantly looking for ways that I can take like pro football casting and like kind of like add it that to jiu-jitsu, or I can take Twitch streaming and add that to jiu-jitsu. Just like all of these other sports and esports and everything have it figured out to such a high degree. They have so many different techniques and stuff to make their stuff engaging, to make their educational content something people actually want to sit through instead of just like sitting in front of a camera and talking from a mile away. And I've noticed that like as I come up with different ideas and implement them, people have been copying them, which is fantastic. I think it actually just elevates the sport. But I'm kind of wondering what's the next idea I'm going to stumble on that I'm going to implement that people are going to copy afterwards. I'm not sure what it is yet, but it's going to be something good.
So that's actually a brilliant point and something that I think anyone who's looking to kind of make their mark in the sport should think about. When you're looking to make a jiu-jitsu product, you know, where people's minds normally go is either I'm going to make an instructional or I'm going to make some sort of like merch or apparel or, you know, gis or something like that. And the problem is, I mean, those markets are super, super saturated. You know, if you want to make a jiu-jitsu instructional, unless you're Andrew Wiltsy, probably you're just going to get drowned in there amongst all of the other instructionals out there. So it always pays to think about, okay, what are the things I can do that are different? And yeah, you brought up Twitch streaming, something that not many people in jiu-jitsu do. There's a lot of ways that you can create value for your community and for your customers that are beyond just standard instructionals. And I'm super curious to see what comes next, because I think right now the market over focuses on instructionals, but man, there's so much more value I think people could get out of our top athletes than just another instructional, right? Because that's one thing there's no shortage of is technique videos.
I want the way that people do instructionals to completely change. Like if you look at any educational YouTube channel, the way they're educating is so much more engaging and it's so much more well thought out. It's not necessarily flashier, but it's flashier. It's designed to get your attention, keep your attention in, and inform you, which is the opposite of every BJJ technique video and BJJ instructional. You know, it's just not engaging to watch a guy talk to the camera from a mile off, move the guy in position, go through the move, you got nothing keeping your attention. So I want to fix that so bad. And I've forayed into some different formats where I'm talking in front of a green screen while stuff's going on in the background, and I'm highlighting stuff through some visual effects. And I think that's the way it's going to go, but that's like super high production value, which I think that a lot of places aren't at the point where they want to invest that much money into something with, because they don't need to yet, because there hasn't been any real competition.
Yeah.
So like our new instructionals, I want to be completely different than what the old ones have been or what anyone else is doing. I just want it to be so much more engaging. So because that's the biggest thing I think that people struggle with in BJJ instructionals is that it's just so fucking boring. Mm-hmm. It's just so goddamn boring. listening to people drone on and monotone about jiu-jitsu. You have to find a way to make it exciting. You have to find a way to keep people engaged.
Yeah. I think there's also the argument to be made that the way that traditional jiu-jitsu instructionals work is not really conducive to learning. You know, a lot of it is, okay, I'm just going to sit here. I'm going to demonstrate the technique and tell you what I'm doing. Go copy that. Whereas if you look at the, I mean, you touched on this actually in our last episode where you talked about how one of the things you wanted to do was bring in domain experts from outside of jiu-jitsu to fill the holes in our knowledge. There's a lot of incredible teaching practices that people use in the more funded sports like football and baseball and basketball. A lot of really good practices for learning and skill development that just haven't quite made their way into jiu-jitsu yet. And I think, man, anyone who's thinking of making instructional content would benefit from studying that stuff before they hit the record button.
I think that is absolutely true. I think that we have a lack of people that really put in effort to become good instructors and good teachers in jiu-jitsu. And this is almost a whole entirely separate rant, but it's something that's been a pet peeve of mine for so long that people don't care about how good they are at teaching, but their entire goddamn money-making idea is to teach.
Yeah.
But they just don't understand that maybe they're not a good teacher. Maybe they can become a much better teacher and that their students will see a significant return on that and that they'll see a return on that.
It is an interesting observation. I mean, in our community, where the mind goes is everyone, of course, especially when they're young, they want to be a competitor, but very few people get rich off of competition. Very few people can pay their bills off of competition.
No, nobody. Gordon Ryan, that's like it. But he has to sell instructionals, yeah. You know?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's the people who kind of get into the gym ownership side of things. The funny thing about jiu-jitsu is it shocks me how successful people actually are at creating jiu-jitsu gyms. I mean, I was always told that, you know, 95% of businesses fail in the first few years. But anecdotally, I can say that in the Vancouver area where I live, which is an incredibly expensive city, right, where, you know, renting out a jiu-jitsu facility is not cheap. There's a lot of people who have had good success just creating a jiu-jitsu gym, starting small and growing from there. And I think you're right that everyone comes into this with a mindset that's all about being a good competitor, but they wind up, when it comes to paying the bills, they wind up making instructionals, they wind up running a gym, but they don't necessarily put as much thought into how to do that as they do into things like their competition game plan. And it is a totally different skill set, being a teacher, being a business owner, completely different from participating in an individual sport.
No, so something I'm always thinking about is like, how do I get this information across to you in a way that you're going to understand? So it's like, how do I organize it in my head? Like, what's the mental route I want you to go through as you learn this to the point where you master it? I think it's an exercise in rationality still, but it's something you have to do. I think to be a good instructor, I think that's why people kind of connect with my content is because it's very logical and it kind of flows in a way that they're able to understand really well.
Yeah.
But that takes effort. That doesn't just happen. I don't just teach a lesson off the cuff most of the time. I put time into thinking, how can I make this better for the person receiving it? Which, again, I think there's a laziness in the jiu-jitsu scene because there just hasn't been as much competition in a lot of different areas. Whereas the first person to get there and start their business, they're the person that kind of runs the monopoly on that business and they're unchallenged. So if we get more competition, I think you will see improvements. Or if I just keep coming up with just dumbass ideas that are kind of good, people will keep using them and then we'll push the scene forward.
Who are some of the people in the scene that you think are doing some of the most interesting things when it comes to innovative ways to teach, innovative products, stuff like that? I mean, is there anyone that's kind of blazing the trail that you would suggest people take a look at?
I don't know about anyone specifically, but occasionally I'll stumble across like Instagram content that you can tell they put a lot of effort into making this very digestible and bite-sized for the medium that they're giving it out through. If I put a long technique video on Instagram, it doesn't do very well. But if I put a short 30-second clip with like text highlighted and arrows pointing and shit like that, it does extremely well. So it's like, know the medium that you're teaching through and cater to that. But I don't really have specifics. I would recommend shopping around to find the people you click with.
Yeah, I think that's also a good point too, is that, you know, just because someone really recommends one instructor, that doesn't mean that they're going to be a good fit for everyone. That is one of the things about jiu-jitsu that is so interesting, is the relationship between the student and the instructor is very, very unique and custom. And you can have someone who, you know, for one person, they might be the best instructor in the world, but for another person, they might be just absolute trash. It's just such a personal experience finding that coach and finding that relationship with your coach. And the same thing goes when you're looking for online instructors too. There are people out there, I don't want to put anyone on the spot, but there are people out there who I fully admit are amazing instructors, but their style just does not resonate with me at all, right? But there's other people who generally are not really well known and don't get a lot of love, but they just speak to me directly and I love their material. So it is a very personal thing, I think.
Everyone's guessing who you're talking about right there.
Well, hey, I will say something positive. One instructional I saw recently that I actually was really pleasantly surprised by was Lovato's new instructional, How to Win. What I liked about it was it's not really an instructional. What he did is he basically made a, I guess the kind of way I would describe it is just like, it's almost like a Netflix autobiography. He kind of like sits down in front of the camera and breaks down kind of the highest highs and the lowest lows of his life. And he kind of chains into that what he was thinking and what his strategy was like and what kind of techniques were the difference makers in the big moments. And it's more of a storytelling experience than it is a traditional instructional. And I mean, I got to say, at least for people like me, that approach resonates way better than the classical approach. So, I mean, there's a shout out to someone who I think is doing it right at the moment.
No, that's awesome. Go him. Mm-hmm. I appreciate anyone who's just seriously contributing to the scene. I want to see jiu-jitsu grow into a powerhouse of a sport. And the only way it's going to happen is by people putting in a lot of effort and people pushing it forward.
So let me piggyback on top of this then. I mean, there is this kind of, I think it's a funny debate right now going on about what the future of jiu-jitsu is going to look like and, you know, whether jiu-jitsu will ever explode into truly mainstream status, whether no-gi is the future, whether gi is dead. I mean, all of this stuff. I've never actually asked you about this. Do you have any thoughts on that, on where you think the future of the sport is going to go and how it's going to evolve?
Yeah, so the gi is not dead. Everyone's saying that has an agenda. You can pay attention, but normally the people saying it are just not that goddamn good at the gi. But the gi's not dead. The gi's not going to die. People love gi. You got to think about, like, what does the average jiu-jitsu like person do? Mm-hmm. You know, they train in the gi. They train no gi. They do a little mixture of both. They want to see both. They want to see that people that are the best at what they do, do what they do. The biggest thing I think you're going to see is in terms of production value. You know, you're going to see companies like Flow, or you're going to see Flow Grappling itself actually try to evolve how they like run shows, how they run stuff like the Who's Number One, where they had all of the different people competing, the show that they did, you know, kind of like the fight series from UFC. That was cool. That's something that you're going to see a lot more of, I think. I don't know if theirs did particularly well, but that's the kind of thing that needs to be happening to push the sport forward. You've got to make it a production value. You've got to sell a product with it. You can't just rely on stale personalities. You're going to see people, you know, they have to do much more interesting interviews. Like the people in the UFC, they get fights based on how exciting they are, not necessarily how good of a fighter they are.
Yeah.
So you're going to see personalities pushed to the top that you can argue all day about whether or not they should be there. Whereas, does it benefit the sport is a completely different argument.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you touched on a lot of big things there. I am inclined to agree with you completely. I think that a lot of the people who say, the gi is dead, they're coming into this with their own mindset, their own goals, and probably their own agenda, like you said. And I mean, look, it's definitely true that there is a large portion of athletes who are focusing their competitive career around no gi. But again, if you look at, you know, who actually brings money into the sport, the people who actually sign up for gym memberships, it's mostly a bunch of nonviolent, out of shape hobbyists who frankly don't want someone else's body fluids all over them. Right? I mean, if we're being honest, and I think the gi is always going to appeal to people like that. It's like how, look, I mean, if you want to know what's effective, I mean, hell, if you want to be an effective fighter, go train MMA. But 99% of people out there will never do that because although it might be fun to watch, it's not necessarily something that people want to do. I think jiu-jitsu has this kind of cool cultural aspect where it's a lot more laid back. It's very welcoming to hobbyists. And I think that's part of what the appeal of the gi is. I think it all kind of ties together. So I personally don't think the gi is dead. I don't think it's anywhere close to it. And I agree with you completely that packaging and productizing and making jiu-jitsu look world-class in big league, that's a big deal. I think Flow Flow gets a lot of criticism, but in terms of their production value, I was at least quite impressed with the last event that just happened. I thought the production value was very good. Stuff like that is awesome to see because it wasn't that long ago that, you know, watching jiu-jitsu, the production value was just like potato quality. It was terrible.
Oh, yeah. No, definitely. Flow's been putting in a lot more effort, and I appreciate that. I still think there's so much more that you can do to push it forward, and I think we're going to see it soon. So I'm excited. I think jiu-jitsu's heading in the right direction. I'm not at all worried about how it's going. I don't think it's going to break into mainstream as easily as people kind of think it will. I don't think it matters like who you have running the sport, you know, like Gordon Ryan is known for being an eccentric personality and how he talks on social media and stuff. And some people argue that that's good for the sport. I think it's irrelevant in terms of pushing the sport forward. I just think that jiu-jitsu as a whole, you know, how many people are training, you know, how many gyms are in the United States and in other places, you know, total. I think that's what's going to push it, whether it's going to hit mainstream or not, and how often we can get into school systems and kind of make it a more traditional powerhouse of a sport itself. That's going to matter a lot.
Agreed. I think that once you see jiu-jitsu get adopted into high school curriculums, that I think is the big domino, right? Once that falls over, once you start seeing schools incorporate jiu-jitsu or submission grappling in general alongside wrestling programs.
I think submission grappling is a lot more likely.
I think so too.
I think we could get a submission grappling program going in a lot of school systems that would be able to kind of compete with wrestling, essentially. That would be pretty neat to see. I think that's more likely than any kind of gi system kind of approaching it, though, because you have to buy a gi, and then that's already kind of like it prevents a certain type of student from being able to do it, period, because gis are expensive.
Unbelievable how expensive gis are. I mean, look, I'm sure that they're expensive to make if you want to have a good one, but yeah, that price barrier, you know, as a Canadian, hockey is tremendously popular, right, where I live, as you can imagine, and hockey is something that a lot of parents dread putting their kids into because the amount of gear you have to buy is just unreal. Jiu-jitsu is better than that, but still, like you said, gis are not cheap. They're quite expensive. I think for that reason, submission grappling also is kind of like a broader category. It's closer to wrestling, which schools are already familiar with. I think it's quite realistic that we could see that get into high schools in the near future. And I think once that happens, I think it's only a matter of time before the scene expands. I mean, I don't know or care if jiu-jitsu will ever become an Olympic sport, but I think it is just going to continue to grow.
I don't know if I see it being an Olympic sport, but I agree with you. I think it's just going to continue to grow. The whole Olympic sport thing is its own debate, and people have good arguments on both sides. I don't really have a strong opinion one way or the other on whether I'd like to see it in the Olympics or not. I think it would just be cool to see it hit such a mainstream platform, because people still don't realize how small something like flow grappling actually is compared to flow track or something like that.
Yeah. I remember a while ago, I saw someone refer to flow as the mainstream media. And I thought, you're crazy, man. Like flow grappling is a tiny, tiny, tiny outfit in a very, very niche sport, right? I mean, nothing about jiu-jitsu is mainstream. We are still very much small and in a development phase. There's still a lot of room to grow for where this thing could go.
Not so much room.
Yep. Well, hey, on that note, if you had your magic wand and you could make jiu-jitsu evolve or change however you wanted, what are some of the things that you personally would love to see change in the sport? You know, to tie up the whole conversation in terms of how we support our athletes, in terms of where you'd love to see the sport go, what everyone could do to improve it. What are the big changes that you would want
to
see?
I'd like to see every gym sponsor a gym rat. That'd be the first thing I'd like to see. So that way the people that actually technically advance the sport through competition are the ones that are getting the recognition and the help that they deserve. I've got some rule changes I'd like to see. I'd like to see them get a little big on stalling calls, like points to be a factor and who's number ones and stuff like that, because I think that the lack of points and the extended time limit really does lead to people stalling. I think that you are less likely to go for something knowing you have 25 minutes left on the clock, and that by going for that thing, you're going to exhaust yourself than you would be otherwise. Whereas, like, if I pass you as hard as I can, I get side control, I get my 3 points. That's 3 points that stays on the board, doesn't go away, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
I think those would be a couple of good changes, and heard arguments against them. I just don't really think that they're correct.
Yeah. I understand the appeal of, you know, like a no rules, no time limit, open sport. Let's actually see if we strip away all the fluff, who's number one. But the reality is, you're right that when you remove things like time limits, you fundamentally change the nature of the sport. You turn it from a sprint into a marathon. And does that now reflect what you actually want jiu-jitsu to look like anymore? I mean, it's not good or bad, but it's just very different. And I think you're right that probably adding some structure to submission grappling, much like how, you know, the UFC added a lot of structure from the times when they used to be totally wide open. I think putting a bit more structure around it will probably just result in a better product overall for everyone. I don't think having rules necessarily waters down or changes the sport in a bad way. I think probably it would be a good thing, like you said, to have clearer criteria for scoring on these systems, better time limits, something like that, I think would be helpful. I mean, I'm not an expert, but that's just my thought.
And then just keep the realistic factor that it's just oftentimes not that goddamn exciting to watch two grown men grapple. You know, it's just, it's for the average viewer, that just doesn't float their boat. So it's like you're not always going to get exponential growth on every business model.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the thing, right? Even for people who do jiu-jitsu, I know a lot of jiu-jitsu people who hate to watch competitive jiu-jitsu. So to some extent, maybe that is just the fundamental nature of our sport. It's not a flashy, high impact, fast moving sport. It's often a slow grinding sport where everything is a battle of inches. And I mean, does that always make for the most spectators friendly thing? Not necessarily. Is your grandma going to get interested in jiu-jitsu because it's exciting to watch? Probably not. But to some extent, I mean, that is what jiu-jitsu is. And if you change that, then maybe you don't have what we love about it anymore.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, hey, we've hit the hour limit here, Andrew. Before we tie up, anything else you wanted to bring up, talk about, or plug?
Well, give me a moment. Things I can plug. Yeah, I can always plug our instructionals on BJJ Fanatics and our YouTube channel and our Patreon account. I'd like to give a shout out to like Heath Pedigo and Daisy Fresh. I do train at Daisy Fresh, guys. We have made up, we're good. You guys can stop asking me whether I'm still training at Daisy Fresh. I train there. I'm there. We are awesome. You know, shout out to Show Your Roll, and I was going to say BJJ Fanatics again, you know, basically they're my biggest sponsor, which, you know, huge shout out to Show Your Roll for just being fucking awesome. I think they're sending me some gear right now, so I'm excited. Their gear's the best. And, you know, Bird deserves his own little special shout out for being the reason that I'm able to even compete at the level that I compete at, because you can't do it without a fucking partner willing to drill with you. And Bird's always been down to do horrible, horrible drills with me. So you got to keep your drilling partners happy.
I remember that conversation you had where you were talking about the most effective way to drill against Bird without accidentally killing him. And I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, we've had to put stuff like pillows over his chest so I don't crush him on throwbys. And yeah, sometimes you got to get creative.
Awesome. Well, hey, man, as always, I'll put the links to that stuff in the show notes. So if people want to check out your Patreon, which again, I cannot plug hard enough. If people want to check out your instructionals, I'll put all of the links there. Anything else you wanted to talk about or plug before we tie this one up?
Nah, man, I appreciate you bringing me on. I had a fantastic time.
Awesome. I always love chatting with you, man. Thanks a lot for coming by. Thanks to all of the listeners as well. I do greatly appreciate it. We'll talk to you next time. Take care.